Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Sally L. Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate Radio. Today, my guest is author Twyla Hieri, or Hieri. She'll tell me the correct way to pronounce that. And she has written a book called Regression. Now, Lisa Kathleen Lasker, who is a friend of mine and has a master's that I'm interested to hear more about from something she recently wrote, but nonetheless, she is going to be hosting the program, basically, and I'm going to be contributing as I can. So let me pick up my guest, Twyla, and my co-host, Lisa, right now. Hi there. This is Sally.
Hi, who's Sally. This?
Oh, it's Lisa. Great. Okay, stick around.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi, Twyla. This is Sally.
Hi there.
Would you pronounce your last name correctly? Because I don't know that I did.
Yeah, my last name's Hieri.
Hieri. Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Well, Lisa and Twyla protested outside the Oklahoma Board, Department of Health on October 1st.
City,
for, what there?
Kansas City,
Kansas City,
Missouri.
Oh, what am I saying? I'm so sorry.
That's okay. You have
someone
a lot
from
of
Oklahoma.
You have a lot of people.
Yeah, okay, sorry. So Kansas City, Missouri, they had a action outside of the Department of Health on October 1st for the 10th anniversary of October Vaccine Injury Awareness Month and also Lisa's birthday. So that's how they met. And Lisa has told me so much about Twyla, and I'm completely eager to hear her story. And I'm going to turn it over to you, Lisa, because you know the correct questions to ask, and I'm looking forward
Thank
to participating
you.
Eventually. Okay, bye.
Okay,
go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. So I just wanted to start by saying we wrote up a functional dialogue interview form between Twyla and I. We just kind of batted it back and forth to help accommodate her needs. So I'm going to read from that. This is the interview with Twyla Hieri, author of Regression. It is a book about autism experience before and after the word autism took flight. Twyla's book not only takes you through her brutal childhood upbringing, but it chronicles her transition from higher functioning to lower functioning autism as a result of pharmaceutical injury derived from years of seeking solutions to an initially environmentally induced problem at whatever level of importance that may be. In my eyes, it's one of a detriment to any society. The book is a page-turner as the author bears her heart and soul as she describes now what she couldn't then. Awesome job, too, Twyla. I just couldn't put the book down. So
first,
let me start by saying thank you, Sally, for this amazing platform. And it's been a pleasure knowing you for nearly 10 years and the things that we've seen and gone through together, and watched this movement of recognition grow. And you're one of the most important pieces of that puzzle, as far as I can see, because, boy, you have been a champion of the cause. It's your heart and your passion, and you love the babies, and let's save the babies. And that was what attracted me to you in the first place. So I've interviewed on your radio show before, and we had a good time and talked, and I've met a lot of people through you, and I wanted to thank you for that, and thanks for the platform for our discussion today. And I know this is one of your last platforms, darn it. Hopefully we can change some things. So I met Twyla when I decided to go public, prodded by you, Sally, to put a gathering together. And so I thought, you know, October Vaccine Injury Awareness Month was something that I'm on board with, and October 1st just happens to be my birthday. And I could see no other cause that would make me happier than standing outside the health department and claiming what happened. And so I put out feelers for anybody on Facebook, and I made an event, and Twyla caught news of it, and she's the only one that showed up that day. And we coordinated with each other before we got there I didn't want to spend my whole birthday out there, but we did get together and we made some impact, and she printed up some stuff and we took a video of it, and we're going to post links on that after we get all this together. It was actually here, but I started posting some of it before we got on the air here, but we'll clean that up when we're done. So with a diagnosis of autism, at the age of 38, Twyla is working through the effects of a magnitude of environmentally induced adversity regarding her individual health. Some of her symptoms mirror my daughter's that came with the damage from Gardasil. For those of you who don't know, the metals in the vaccines have a way of diverting our neurological structure, to put it mildly. The dendrites, the nerve endings, which are responsible for growth and development, are stunted, and the body must take corrective measures, thus rerouting neural paths. And that's, I suspect, what happened to Twyla at the age of 5 when she got caught up on her vaccine. So we'll talk about that later. As I was getting to know Twyla and reading her book, it spawned a lot of questions about, there's a lot of books that I've read about childhood development, and I have a master's degree, and social psychology is my undergrad, and public affairs is my master. And I greatly went into doing the master's because of what happened to my daughter. Social psychology was always a passion of mine. I love to know what makes people tick and what makes a society function and how people interact and everything, communications, all of it. So as I was reading through hers, I've noticed that as I was speaking about the dendrites, that some areas of cognition are heightened while others decline with the vaccines. So it does make some people smarter. And you saw running blank on the movie, Rayman or something like that. Anyway, so when she was able to put all her stuff on paper, I was very impressed with all of that. So we need to be aware, especially on this interview, of her processing and her sensory abilities, and we're going to try to be as respectful as we can of that. With that, the diminished neural pathology becomes reactions to light and sound, and it's a challenging barrier. And we want to be able to conduct a great interview that'll get our message across. So, Twyla, I just wanted to tell you that if at any time through this interview that you're shot a question or anything, you have plenty of time to answer, okay? Take 5 minutes if you need to process it. We're good with that.
Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah. So one of her book was striking, and also one of her more impactful essays that she sent to me while I was on a plane on the way to Texas. It's called Neurodiversity is Dead, Now What? Which it really shows her strength at communicating her thoughts. And she's been writing for a few years now, and her works can be viewed on the links that we've posted below. So I have some questions I wanted to ask Twyla about her first book, and this is where we're going to start into our dialogue. And I'm just going to read from mine, and you're going to read from yours. Are you okay with that, Twyla?
Yep, I'm good.
Sally, just kind of take notes on our conversation, and then if you have questions at the end, we'll go there, okay? Sally?
Yes, dear, I was on mute.
Okay.
So just carry on, keeping on mute.
I figured you were.
I have a dog who likes to bark, so I don't want to interrupt you.
No.
Go ahead.
I gotcha. Okay, I'm hoping my kids don't show up, like, right now. So, So we'll go ahead and go in the questions about her book, and then we'll talk about some healing techniques that she's found since divorcing the pharmaceutical industry. And then maybe we can talk about some important economic issues. Right now the big topic is COVID and the corona scare, and I'm sure it all ties in with the continuous fog in the air right now that we are all being swallowed by. I'm not a bad author, am I? Okay. So my question, the first is, when you were younger in early childhood, and you mentioned in your book about the visit to the clinics for the shots, I needed more clarification, but I went back and bought your book again and read it again. And you told me you weren't getting vaccines, right? You were getting the globulin, gamma globulin. So I see in chapter 29 of regression addresses this question. It sounds like both, which goes to show just how much attention is being paid even back then. Do you think Medicaid has anything to do with selective vaccination? Meaning, do children on a Medicaid get a different shot than those who are paying? I also can't help but wonder what role your mother's way of treating you as a child has to do with neuronal development, too. I read a book I do a Hoffer Awards. I'm a judge for them, and a book came across my palate by a woman named Sally Severino, and she was a PhD psychiatrist. And she wrote a book called Sacred Desire, fascinating read. So she talks about the relationships between the mother and its child and the role of neuronal development through that. So when I look at the vaccines coupled with the upbringing, you know, the love that's delivered to the child, can't help but wonder about that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll try to answer all aspects of the questions you just posed there. When I mention in my book about getting shots, I'm primarily talking about the gamma globulin injections I was getting for the immunodeficiency that I was diagnosed with as an infant. I've confirmed that I didn't receive any vaccines until I was 5 years old. Back then, and I say back then, I was born in 1975. The whole vaccinate immediately upon birth thing wasn't pushed as hard as it is today. I can't give you exact figures of how many people were vaccinated in their first hour of your life, like you see today. But back then, I don't think it was as prevalent or as compulsory. So I had a few months to live vaccine free. And during those few months, as my development was observed initially, I started to show characteristics of a severe immunodeficiency. So I was given, based on that, I was given a medical exemption from vaccination. And I find this really interesting because it shows that pediatricians and immunologists were aware of the risk for vaccine injury in immunologically susceptible populations in the 70s and 80s when I was growing up. And today, it's much different. With very few exceptions, you can't get a medical exemption from vaccines until after you've already been injured by them. So that's what I was talking about in my book. Regarding your question about whether kids whose parents use Medicaid get shots that are different, I'm not convinced that the contents of the shots are different. I see why people go in that direction because the shots are shipped, the vaccines are shipped separately because the government has contracts to buy them at a certain rate. And I understand why people might question whether those Medicaid shots are different given the history of eugenics worldwide and in this country, the United States, and with the fact that the Medicaid shots are stored separately because they're shipped separately. But I do think that that's really more of an economic issue than a eugenics issue. But I don't blame anybody for having that suspicion. And then lastly, in regards to my mother's interactions with me, I'm sure my mother's abusive and neglectful ways of interacting with me did affect my neuronal development. I'm pretty sure my mother would meet the criteria for an autism diagnosis herself if she'd been tested for it before her current mast cell-related dementia that she's experiencing now set in. I'm pretty sure she'd meet the criteria. So even if my mother hadn't been a completely manipulative narcissist, as I depict, she wouldn't have been able to model healthy interpersonal interactions because she doesn't have that skill set herself due to many pathological processes.
Likely ones that come from her child rearing. So, yeah.
Great deal of them, but also she's chemically injured too because she can't, the same way I can't metabolize things, she can't metabolize things.
Huh.
So
that has to be some kind of heredity there.
Oh, it is.
So I'm curious to know when your auditory issue showed up and you started to really dislike the loud box, that's how you said it in your book, the television that diverted Bert's attention when you were small enough to crawl up into his lap. I can't help but wonder how much damage you suffered from those catch-up vaccines, especially if the gamma globulin shot sent you from walking to crawling again. Perhaps you need the gamma globulin shot. Your need for them spawned from different properties of your two parents, and I didn't explain this on paper, but I'm going to.
Okay.
Back when I was a child, parents had to have blood tests to see if they were compatible type before they could have children. And I was born in 1965, so I know they were doing it at that time, but they stopped doing it about in the 70s. That's what I was getting at there.
Oh, yeah, I'm not familiar with that history at all. Yeah, so I can't really speak to that well.
Right. And I haven't done a ton of research in that area either. It's just something that I remember from the top of my head. So
okay,
you can go ahead with your part now.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I can't really say for sure when my auditory sensitivities and challenges initially showed up. I've been sensitive to sound for as long as I can remember. Of course, I was significantly exacerbated in 2014 when I had my regression, my pharmaceutically induced regression. But I've had some degree of a sensitivity to sound throughout my memory. So, I mean, I can't say if it happened, you know, I was like 1, 2, 3, I don't know. Or if it was always like that.
Right.
But what else? Yeah, that's pretty much the only part of that I can address now that you clarified what you're talking about blood types, since I can't speak to that.
Right. And but you said you did some digging into the genealogy. And you found your parents had more genetic material. I mean, that's some interesting stuff there, too.
That could get into a whole nother... It was interesting. I mean,
how did you find out there's an inbred result? I don't understand that.
Oh, well, I mean, I was just doing genealogy as, like, one of the few things I could do when I was really... My brain was in really, really, really bad shape. Because I couldn't go outside. I mean, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't talk. So I just stuck myself in the computer and did genealogy because that really meshed with how my mind worked. And anyway, I got back a few generations analyzing the genes and stuff. And I'm like, oh, well, it looks like my parents' lineage is intersected like 3 or more generations ago. So
wow.
How much information I got from that's kind of limited because I'm not a genetic genealogist, but I've got enough hinting at some inbreeding back there. So, I mean, how that plays
well,
out.
It seems to be that
I can't
if you,
really
when you
say, but it might.
Well, what I gather from what I can see is, and what I read in your book, and I, you know, it does tell us a little bit about you, is that you, when you get a directive in your mind, you go and you get it. So if you want answers to something, you're going to get it.
Yes. Yeah.
And
I haven't gone that far in that, though, so I don't know.
That's an amazing drive. Well, it was just like when you wanted to know everything about Buddha, and then you wanted to know everything about the African, you know, your heritage. You know, when people spawned different things in you and gave you an interest in something, you really went full force towards that one interest. So,
yeah, definitely do that.
And that probably helped you with your jobs and all that stuff. But I can see where it's easy. I'm going to go on to number two. It's easy to see through your progression of your psychiatric treatments how your health changed. And you were ultimately sacrificing one thing for another each time you sought to correct something through mainstream medicine. And I will point out that those concerns are distinct from the fact that my microbiome was disrupted by modern medicine in 2014, and as a result I became more autistic. Among my losses are the fact that my exacerbated autism does not permit me to tolerate ambient sound in the ways I used to. The exacerbation of my auditory processing disorder does not allow me to hear as well as I used to, making me functionally deaf in environments with poor acoustics or multiple speakers. I can no longer work in any of the environments I previously worked in because of my enhanced sensory issues. Because of other cognitive limitations that can onset with sensory events, I can no longer even live independently and may never be able to live independently again. So how long have you been off the pharmaceuticals now, and how has your health changed? What are you doing different? I know you moved to the country and found some peace there. Good for you. What would you personally recommend for others in your shoes?
I've been off pharmaceuticals for a little over a year. I say that because a little over a year ago, I wrapped up a very short duration low-dose round of prednisone to tamp down my adult pans/pandas enough to let the adaptogenic herbs I've been taking really do their work. The prednisone was the first drug I'd taken in several years, so that was the real anomaly. I've regained quite a bit of my functionality, as is clear from the fact that I'm doing this interview. I cured my POTS, the postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. That's the type of dysautonomia that I got right after I got the pneumonia vaccine. So I'm healing. I mean, 6 years ago when I regressed, I lost so much I couldn't read, write, speak, or count. I never could have done this interview back then. I wouldn't have been able to read the questions you sent to me or write an outline of my answers or speak my answers. I'm not quite back to my baseline yet. My auditory processing challenges are still pretty severe. If I make a mistake with my diet, my brain information is ready to rev up and take over. I can still lose my speech and become nonverbal if I have a strong autoimmune reaction that affects my brain or if I'm in sensory overload. What I'm doing to heal, I use diet. Diet for me is grain-free and low lectin. I use a lot of herbs. I cycle through a lot based on what my body is asking for at the time. Too varied and extensive to discuss here, but I will mention Japanese knotweed and turmeric in a 2-to-1 ratio is one of the best formulas for brain inflammation I've ever encountered. I'm also doing a type of Tibetan yoga called Salung, and I'm doing cold laser treatments and sensory integration therapies with my chiropractor. And then I have certain energetic and spiritual practices that help me out. As far as what I'd recommend for others, everybody has a different ecosystem. So what I'd recommend for others is trial and error until you find what nourishes your body and mind and spirit. And don't let anybody push you into believing something that clearly harms you is actually good for you. If it hurts you, if it causes you to have a big setback, stop doing it. Doesn't matter what herbalist or guru or clary person or doctor or naturopath tells you that it's good. If it hurts, stop. Don't take guidance from people with cult mentalities. That's anybody who thinks their treatment is universal, that it works for everyone. That's the Western pharma pushers. A lot of vegans and plant-based people are in that category. One size never, ever, ever fits all. So that's pretty much what I'd say.
Do you still not like pot?
I can't stand it. It makes me sick.
See,
it
flares
my brain
bad. To each his own, and there couldn't be one better advice. You know, listen to your body. What is your body like, and what doesn't your body like? What can you tolerate, and what can't you tolerate?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. There's no one-size-fits-all for anything for anybody.
Mm-mm. Nope.
So the next part of your book, and a lot of it is my conclusions. You know, I'm going to jump out on a limb here and say I'm an addict. Hi, I'm Lisa Lasker, and I'm an addict. I like to smoke my weed.
Okay.
You know, why not be totally honest? I'm writing a book myself, and it's going to be a blockbuster. But
cool.
So I wanted to personally address when you, in your book, you did a lot of talking about when you were going through your counseling and therapies and when you were inpatient and things like that, you got bunched up with the addicts and stuff. And you clarified for this too, but we're going to go ahead and go through it because we're on the air. I know your mother was a piece of shit from what you tell us. She put her addiction before you. So I made an assumption there that she was an addict. And I've been labeled an addict myself, and never did I leave my children alone. Never did I bring men in and out of the house. Didn't put my children there, nor did I ever seek to benefit from their harm. We had electricity, running water, food, shelter, always. It was at times selfishly, admittedly. I was selfish at times, admittedly. I was. But mostly I worked my ass off caring for those kids. And they are pretty well-adjusted adults, with the exception of the Gardasil setback. Most of them are fairly problem-free. And my daughter is getting a whole lot better today, too, because of that diet you discussed. Anyway, my kids all got plenty of loving attention and spite. So where I'm going with this is, if you had a more meaningful interaction with the adults in your life as a small child, do you think you would be more sociable as an adult? Or is that a possible result of the assault to the neuronal construct, or both?
Like you were saying about you assuming, based on my descriptions of my mother's behavior in my book, that she was an addict. Well, it was funny, and now you knew in advance of me answering this, though, but my mother was never addicted to a substance. She didn't drink or do drugs. The thing my mom was addicted to, she was addicted to chaos. She was addicted to being abused. She was addicted to spending money on trinkets and junk, and addicted to hoarding things. She was completely sober when she was doing all the things you talk about, bringing men in and out of the house and stuff like that. She often chose to get with men who were addicted to drugs, but she didn't do drugs herself. It's funny because her mom, my grandma, was an alcoholic, and my mother refused to associate with drunks. So my mom never got with drunks, but she saw getting with a crackhead was okay. I mean, that was just how it worked.
That is so weird. That's so weird.
Yeah. Regarding whether I might be more sociable as an adult if I'd had more meaningful interactions with adults in my life as a child, I don't really think of myself as unsociable. Maybe that's me not using the word right, but to me it kind of implies that I don't like interacting with people, and that's not true. Like, when I see people complaining and saying things like, oh, I hate people, that's what unsociable means to me, and that's not me. I'm not like that, and I haven't been. The term I'd use to describe myself instead is poorly socialized. If you think about the isolation that almost the entire world is experiencing right now because of these lockdowns, I'm 44 years old, and well over half my life has been lived in this level of isolation. And I'm not saying, oh, poor me, that's not my point. My point is, I've literally spent over 25 years in as intensive isolation as everybody's experiencing right now. That was because the illness, sensory issues, or literally having no voice during the periods of time that I've been nonverbal, or when I did have a voice, not knowing how to use it properly. And see, that level of isolation, as everybody knows, it really impacts a person's social skills, even if they aren't on the spectrum. So I did have some limited interaction with healthy adults when I was a child. I had a friend when I was young, and her parents seemed functional. But even when I was at her house, when people interacted in healthy ways and everybody was getting their needs met, and I saw that at her place, I holed up in her room all the time because all the activity was overwhelming to me. So you can't ever leave out that key, how sensory issues seriously impact a person's ability to engage socially. Like, you literally can't process what's going on around you at the same pace as everyone else. You're barred from engaging in the same ways that other people can engage. Like, anybody who uses ASL, American Sign Language, because they're hard of hearing or deaf, they can explain that to you, too. So, I mean, it's not just autism. There's other conditions, you know, where that experience is seen. So, like, I mean, a core aspect of my social challenges is my auditory processing challenges, and that I can't process speech and respond to speech so rapidly when it's complex. That's why I needed you to type these questions out to me in advance of the interview. And then if there's background sound or crosstalk, which is more than one person talking, it's even worse. You know, my processing, I'm even slower, sometimes even silenced. But since I've moved to a quiet place, I'm out in the country in the middle of nowhere, I have people over to visit, and it's in my environment that is friendly to my needs, and I mean, I'm social as could be out here in my little homestead. So There are like people who wrote to me after my book came out in February last year, and they said, why aren't you doing a book tour? Why aren't you doing readings? And I'd write back that it was beyond my skill set at the time, because even just a year ago, my functioning was less stable and I was more prone to losing my ability to speak. And the people who wrote who I wrote that to would respond by saying things like, but you wrote a book, you should be able to give a talk. And even Awesome Sally here said to me when we were chatting online about this interview, something like, you wrote a book, this interview should be a piece of cake. But see, a typical person sees two paths that they perceive as difficult, and they rank them together as equal. So they say, oh, writing a book is hard, so I'm going to rank that up with other hard things, and therefore if you can do one hard thing, you should be able to do other hard thing. But like, writing a book and doing talks aren't the same thing. Neurologically, they're very different because speech and writing come from two distinct parts of the brain. Like, an analogy would be this. If I had, I suspect I have a different kind of relationship to numbers that most people have. So I imagine if I could only see from my own neurological perspective, and I said to you, hey, you can shop for groceries without going over your budget. Therefore, you should be able to manage a hedge fund with no problem. And you'd be like, what? You're kidding, right? Like, no, why would I be able to do that? But from my neurological perspective and my relationship with numbers and concepts, those things are way more analogous than writing and speaking are. So even after years of autism awareness, well-intended people can be really ignorant about the strengths and deficits that lots of autistic people experience, because autism isn't an epidemic of self-doubt and insecurity that leaves autistic people to have problems with communication. It's not. I don't have a self-esteem problem. I have a neuroinflammation problem. So it's a inflammation in certain areas of the brain that results in an inhibition of certain communication processes. So
So,
I hope that covers it.
I was thinking about that earlier. I'm going to stop right there and then I'll let you pick back up. I was thinking about that earlier, just not too long ago, actually, about I bet they know exactly which area of the brain to inflame for a different type of response. I mean, there's no way they can't. I'm going back into, you know, as much as we are an experiment, each individual person, I believe, is an experiment. So, that'd be interesting study making stuff there. So, anyway.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, going to the grocery store and saying, yes, thank you, that's something that's like, automatic, pretty much. You know, those are easy things.
Yeah, if it's not complicated, or if I have, I consider it like having a script for something. Like if I go to the grocery store, I know what they're going to say. Did you find what you're looking for? Yes, thank you.
Right.
You know, and then here's your receipt. Have a nice day. You too. And if it's automatic like that, I'm cool. Or if there's no background noise, I'm really comfortable with a person. I can improvise more. But you start adding layers, background noise, complexity of concepts, you know, I'm going to be slower. It's going to be more of a struggle. I'm going to need more time to prepare, just because that's how it works, you know?
Right. Very good. So, yeah, you found peace in the country. It's great.
Yeah, it's great out here.
So
I can walk out my front door without earplugs in, and that's amazing. And all I hear is cows are the loudest thing I hear. It's really good.
Wow. I hear birds. I have a nest of birds in my garage right now, a baby bird.
Oh!
There's a long story behind that. When I went through my master's in Dark Night of the Soul, a bird got trapped in my wall. At the same time, my daughter was trapped in a jail cell at 7 months pregnant. And that was one of the things that I said, there's things, stories I could tell you that would curl your tail. But anyway, so, it really kept me good and locked up for a good 3 years. So I ran from a lot of stuff for about 3 years, and I decided I'm done. When I met you October 1st, it's when I came out of my shell. And I'm still back and forth with it, as you could feel, because it took me so long to get this interview done. Normally, I could whip out an interview like this in a day. I wanted to address, I'm going to skip to number four down here. when you wrote in your book, it just still makes me laugh about having a baby when you wanted to have a baby. So you were trying to get off all the pharmaceuticals that you could at the time.
Mm-hmm.
How you said it's an irrational desire. you couldn't have been more right. Procreation is egotistical. It is. It's all about me. And then you have the child. So this is something you don't know, but I can tell you. And Sally knows, and she could probably attest. When you have the child, it's no longer about you. So it'll take your ego straight away. And then you have two or three more, and you have no ego anymore. I never stopped to consider the rationality behind that choice. And I don't regret it. It felt right, and I did it. And I don't regret anything. So.
That's awesome.
Anyway, so you're taught, let's go into the neurodiversity issue, because you've spent a lot of time in the autism community, and they're very good at refusing to. And Sally, when I listened to your interview with Bill Posey in 2014, I listened to that yesterday, and he hit the nail right on the head, and Twyla had said she wanted to say more about it. This cognition, the cognitive dissonance, and even an injury, and she says congenital autism versus pseudo autism in this article. And do you really believe that autism can be congenital? And might that possibly be destruction of the DNA, not genetic blueprints, destruction of DNA? Again, due to the vaccines, because I know when you get a vaccine, it has that other baby DNA in it that it was cultured on. Does that get in and mix with our DNA and changes?
Yeah, first I'll talk about, you had mentioned the cognitive dissonance among the neurodiversity community. First I'll speak to that. I've seen a lot of adult autistic people freak out about how their health plummets after they get a vaccine, usually a flu shot. I mean, we've seen these people like, oh, no, I'm so sick. And I mean, they don't mean sick, they mean sick, like brink of death sick. And they're like, but when you suggest to them that their very cognitive / neurological differences might fundamentally be due in part, at least in part, to vaccine injury, they freak out and start saying you hate science. I mean, it's pretty amazing. They just lived through an injury, and they're just sitting here going, oh, my God, I'm so screwed up after the shot. Oh, my God. Well, you think maybe this started 20-some years ago? And they're like, yeah, then they think you're crazy. So anyway, that cognitive dissonance is pretty amazing, really. It's like gymnastics.
It blows me away. I've heard it more than once from my people, too. My sister-in-law says, I went and got a flu shot. She goes, I was sick the whole next day. I said, Molly, I've been telling you for, 4 or 5 years now? And you're still getting the shot? Seriously?
It's amazing. It's amazing what people can talk themselves into. But as far as that, do I think autism can be congenital? I think, yeah, it can. I think that what we used to call Asperger's has probably been with the human race for hundreds or thousands of years, long, long, long before we had pharmaceuticals and pesticides and plastics and EMF and all this other stuff that hurts us today. I think Asperger's is low-grade brain inflammation, and the unique neural connectiveness it spawns can actually endow a person with gifts while being minimally disabling or perhaps not disabling at all. But I don't think that most of the autism, or what we're calling autism today, fits that description at all. I think most of what we're seeing is way more intense and severe brain inflammation, and in some cases, brain infection. What I've learned since I wrote that essay, Neurodiversity is Dead Now What, I learned since then is that people can be born with Lyme disease if their mother has Lyme, and that Lyme can infect the brain, and that Lyme and co-infections play a role in some of what gets labeled as autism. And I think people therefore, because of that, what I just described, they can, in fact, be born that way. So they're born with a terrible infection, and it manifests neurologically, and it's an infection that can and should be cured because, I mean, as Lyme progresses, it's just devastating. So you can't just be, oh, this is just how I am. Well, yeah, until he whipping kills you, you don't understand the trajectory of this disease. You're not fine as you are. It's deadly. So anyway, but I also do think that a vaccine that parents are injected with can have an impact on a child's neurology. I'm not sure about the genetic blueprints aspect. It seems possible, seems understudied, since even the vaccine inserts indicate the vaccines haven't been studied to determine whether they have mutagenic potential. I'd be surprised if they didn't, considering you're injecting foreign DNA fragments. But if there's a body of literature on it, I haven't read it, so I can't say more than that. But where I am comfortable saying that a parent's vaccination experience impacts a child's neurology is there's quite a bit of research that indicates an immune activation event during pregnancy is associated with increased risks of neurodevelopmental challenges in a child. And the mother getting vaccinated while pregnant is certainly an immune activation event. So,
right.
But yeah, finally, I mean, to wrap up that question, back to the cognitive dissonance thing among the self-described neurodiverse, I think it's odd that they're so offended when you suggest they're injured. I mean, because I don't see why that's offensive, why having an injury is associated with stigma. Like, if I fracture a rib in a collision, it doesn't make me a lesser human being. Or if somebody got heart problems back in the day, it didn't affect their worth as a person. And I suspect that lots of autistic people are resistant to accepting that autism is usually an injured or infected state because they've been subjected to abusive attempts to cure them, like ABA or electroconvulsive therapy, both of which I think should be abolished. You don't treat other infectious or inflammatory disorders with behavioral training or shock because it wouldn't work and it'd be cruel. You wouldn't tell somebody with lupus or arthritis to go through 40 hours of behavioral exercises to treat the inflammation that's destroying their skin and joints and other organs. So I don't think you should treat autism, which is clearly an immunologically based condition, with things like that either. You just treat the inflammation or infection first, and then behaviors will fall in line and become less problematic.
I agree with that. And you know, as I see even talking to you today as opposed to talking to you a couple months ago, and you're doing that turmeric regimen, I'm telling you that stuff. your voice, your speech is a lot more clear, and I know we have a dialogue and everything, but I'm seeing some differences already.
Oh man, I'm doing so much, and it's helping me so much, and I'm so grateful.
Yeah, I'm glad you found it too. I remember one of the first things I said to you was, "So you figured it out, huh?" Yeah, and me too. I mean, I'm the improvements I've seen in myself from changing my diet and even just starting to eat that black garlic. It's like, oh boy, I have so much energy now, and I'm getting slender, and it's like, wow. So
yeah, it's amazing what simple things that aren't mixed up in a lab can do for us. It's really amazing.
Okay, so another area we're going to address is about your book and experiences through the psychiatric treatments is the DSM. And I think that, you know, having the social psychology background and stuff, and the DSM is it's a book of labels. And labels so we can know which uptake regulator in the brain to block. And even though we don't know how the body will react in retaliation, rendering it all useless. I mean, it's stupid. I've always kind of been against throwing pharmaceuticals at any problem. And I mean, all my life. And my dad was a doctor. So I've kind of walked through life with that type of diversity too. And I went rounds with him and had to, you know, find my own identity and did that. But it took me a lot of years to come to that. I didn't do that until I was in my 30s. In my 40s, after my daughter's guard is still damaged. That woke me up, I'm telling you. So our bodies are complex. They're a system, and some interrupt others, and whatever. So finally, Oh, no. What makes you think the coronavirus? Well, yeah, let's talk about that coronavirus and the financial reset and how, you know, what do you think is going on with Trump? I told Sally the other day that Trump defunded the CDC and the NIH behind defunding the WHO. The WHO. The WHO.
Okay. Yeah. Which part do you want? All I got to say about the DSM is it's worthless. Burn it. Throw it out. It's worthless.
We feel the same about that.
Relic.
Yeah.
Relic.
Yeah.
Throw it away.
Yep.
What I think about the COVID-19 and the financial reset. Okay. First, I want to address something because I've seen accusations of this elsewhere. People saying that I've said that the COVID-19 isn't real. No, it's real. I know it's real. I'm not a denial of its existence. Okay, but what it is it's the perfect storm that accomplishes a lot of things that an elite group of people need to accomplish. And one of the things that they want to accomplish is to destroy the world economy. But the thing is, the global economy was already destined for a crash. There have been multiple unsustainable bubbles. Yeah. Floating on little more than faith and investor exuberance for over a decade now. We never really recovered from the last crash. It was just propped up with a bunch of fake stuff, just bubbles, right? And so combine that with the fact that all fiat currency eventually deflates to its inherent value of zero, and you have a financial foregone conclusion. But just to let the system collapse without a backstory, that would have created too many questions and it would have woken too many people up. So causing an economic collapse because you put the entire world under some version of house arrest, that's an excellent way to permit the collapse to proceed while supplying an explanation that correlates with people's experiences. So people don't have to be economically savvy at all. They understand that when 30% or more of the population that was once working is no longer earning a paycheck, that the result has to be financial disaster. So the economic collapse box is checked by the people who needed to check that box. So instead of the banksters and the Fed and their financial mismanagement taking the blame for the fall, the virus takes the hit. And because the masses can see and understand that hit, they don't have to look any further to understand that in some way, shape, or form, a global economic collapse was already a done deal. I mean, it has been in the works for a long, mm-hmm. long time.
But how we
end up better off is if we move to using a decentralized, unregulated currency or currencies that are tied to some sort of scarcity model. We won't end up better off if we allow the same banksters and Federal Reserve types who caused this to make us subservient to the same or a different kind of fiat currency, or if we allow governments to regulate or control currencies that have the potential to liberate us, namely cryptocurrencies. We also won't end up better off if this virus is leveraged to increase dependence on the government by instituting universal basic income or a similar model that basically serves to enslave us. I know people are for that think it's going to liberate them. That's the craziest idea ever.
That's socialism.
Money and
yeah, that's socialism. It's taboo in America.
It's ludicrous.
Yeah, socialism won't fly in America.
Let's hope not.
That is, it is socialism. But you know what? I don't know what'll fly in America anymore because everybody's staying home. You know, you already have an enslaved population that wants direction and control, and it's a crime that they'll believe this virus bullshit and that they're not strong enough to fight a virus, and some of them aren't. Stay home.
Well, yeah, I mean, and part of
but
other
don't,
things with it.
Don't
I mean,
close
it's
down
really deadly to some people. I mean, you the way it's designed, you hook it up with like 5G or something, it goes from something that I could kill in 3 days with the herbs I grow here on my farm to something
exactly.
that really is going to wipe out healthy people because you're combining it with weaponized things like 5G. It's complicated, but I didn't prepare enough
that's true.
That.
That's true. And that 5G interrupts our cell buoyancy. You know what? That revitalizes it is Himalayan pink salt and black garlic. Do you get the energy from that black garlic that I do?
Like energetics, like
Yes, it makes
I guess
me
I don't
go.
Understand. I will say I love it. I love the black garlic. I love everything about it.
Okay. Good deal. I've got more if you want to.
Awesome. Thank you.
And I'm getting ready to harvest in July, so I'm going to be making a lot more. So.
Nice.
Anyway, okay, so Sally, where are you? Oh. Hang on, I'm kind of looking through our
Hi there.
Transcript here. Mm. Hey, Sally.
What a great interview. Wonderful.
Well,
I'm
we're
really
having fun,
excited.
Aren't we?
Thank you.
Well, I've written your personal tornado in here. No, but I don't know if you want to share that. But
I'm not sure
so
what you're just
I
talking
was,
about, though.
Well, this is where I listened to your interview with Bill Posey last night, your 2014 interview with him, and he was talking about the services.
Was it?
Huh?
No, it
yeah,
was just 2018.
Oh, I don't know where 14
yeah.
came from. I'm dyslexic, even in my brain.
That's okay.
So this script and writing the script was the way to go on this for both of us. So,
well, I have to say, Twyla, you give, what do you call that? High level autism. What is it called?
Oh,
Asperger's.
No. It's like there's different levels of autism using the word autism.
High functioning autism.
My goodness, I don't detect any autism in you, except for what
that's
you are telling us.
That's because we wrote this out. Because we wrote this out.
Right. But
yeah,
so I want to talk about that if I might. So the thing is that. You know, you brought up Rain Man. Twyla could not be more on the qui vive with it and thoughtful and everything that I don't associate with autism. Everybody I know who has autism and is even high functioning, you are leagues ahead of them. I mean, let me say that. So I'm happy for you that you are. And it's interesting that you had to, because you're responding on the fly as well as you are reading from a sheet of paper. So that's right there. I'm beginning to wonder, did you even need to script this considering how well and how intelligently you're answering off the cuff? I don't know.
Well, that's how well we prepared in advance, Sally. I'm sorry, Twyla.
Well, come on. You can't be doing this off the cuff. I don't know. I'm skeptical.
I sent you the interview.
Yes, dear. Let me just finish, okay? What I'm finding is that she's doing just spectacularly when you go off the train of thought and the scripted thing.
I agree.
I'm just saying it's working out really well. You had mentioned that you had been cloistered for 20 years. Was that, being out in the country all by yourself, or were you at any point in your life institutionalized? Twyla.
I've only lived in the country for a few months. I moved out here to have peace. I wasn't institutionalized in the sense of like, I only had like short-term stays in the hospital. So I wasn't institutionalized. Like my isolation was from, sorry, I wasn't prepared for this one. My isolation was from lots of things. Like, as is in my book, when I was growing up, I was homeless as a teenager. So I mean, I was moving from place to place, so I wasn't part of the community. And then also I've been sick because of my messed up immune system a lot of my life. And so I was just isolated because the extent of my illness or whatever illnesses I was dealing with. So that, all that, and also not being able to function in lots of situations that other people can, like go out to a place where there's music playing or something, like all those things come together to add up to years of isolation. I hope that makes sense. Does that make sense?
No. I really appreciate your explaining that, because it's not what people normally think of as isolation, but all of those things are isolating. So that makes sense.
And for you to be able to explain that, Phyla, is fantastic, because, and that does show your progress, that you did just answer her on the spot like that.
It's progress. 6 years of healing since my regression. 6 years and still at it. Yep.
When you talk about, Twyla, reducing inflammation, are you referring to the turmeric having that effect?
Yeah, that's one of the anti-inflammatory supplements that I take is turmeric. There's others, but that's a key one. And it's very short.
Well, what others are there? Because I deal with inflammation. And I would like to
black
know,
garlic.
Personally.
Black garlic. Black garlic.
And turmeric. And is what else have you used?
Sally, I'll mail you some black garlic, honey.
All right. I totally have absorbed that is a really powerful and good product. But what else besides black garlic, turmeric, Twyla, would you say is helpful reducing inflammation?
Oh, no. See, this is where I get confused when I have to recall information and I'm not ready to.
Okay.
No, sorry.
That's okay. All I can say is, Lisa, I'm going to talk to her now because she can't take two people talking to her at once. Right now, Lisa, I'm going to let her think about what else reduces inflammation while I ask you, Lisa. What are you talking about in terms of when you were doing your master's, there was some kind of turmoil that you faced from the institution that you were studying at, or where?
No. It wasn't from the institution. It was on a much deeper level than the institution, Sally. It was like your personal tornado, honey. Do you remember when you told me about the personal tornado?
Oh, you mean I actually had a tornado? Yes. That was wild.
Yes. So it was along those lines. I've become very spiritual in my quest forward I was in seminar for my master's degree. And I was very vocal throughout I did a lot of my work online. I was very vocal about my daughter's vaccine injury. And I was everything that you're seeing today, I wrote about 10 years ago. I mean, things that you're seeing come to light today, I researched and wrote about when I was doing my master's degree. And I can show you my work on that. Yeah.
Well, I wish I'd known you back then, because then I would not have...
This is back when Jenny was very active in when she was speaking in the news and everything. So
Jenny McCarthy, for the audience's benefit.
Yeah. And I remember donating to her cause back then, too. But that was a long time ago. But I did, all of my college work reflects all of that, everything you're seeing today that's come to light. So it's an interesting story. But my dark night of the soul, with my daughter incarcerated at 7 months, knowing that she had a Gardasil injury and she had to eat right, and how that would affect her pregnancy and bringing my grandson into this world. And that's a whole other story altogether, because he has repercussions from that as well, and he's never had a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he did. He had vitamin K because he had a circumcision, but he hasn't had any vaccine other than that. And I didn't want to do that, but it wasn't my decision. So...
What I have read recently is that 80% of autistic people have had the hepatitis B shot. Has anyone else seen that?
I believe it. I mean, there's so many statistics flying around out there, and you got to decide which ones are real and which ones aren't. I mean, unless it's tested 30 times and comes back the same every time, then it's not a not a theory. It's only a theory. It isn't grounded. So.
Well, we don't have any reliable sources in regard to the outcomes from vaccines. I really, really wish
well,
we did.
Well, there's a few. But Chris actually is doing some awesome work. And,
yeah, he is.
You know, there's quite a few out there that are doing, and the, God, the family. I can't remember my last name. But there's plenty
well,
of, there's
Chris
plenty of.
Is talking about, or several people are talking about the saturation of the brain with aluminum, which with
yeah.
the 5G is going to torture those
mm-hmm.
whose brains are saturated with aluminum, which it came up in terms of autistic children. So
which means they
I
need
thought,
a heavy cilantro diet to pull the aluminum out, because cilantro will do that.
See,
did you know that?
The cilantro has to bind with something, otherwise you just put the aluminum in other parts of the body.
Also, what I found worked really, I hear you, Twyla, what I found really, really worked for my daughter was, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I got on my knees and prayed, and a television evangelist told me this, dimethylglycine, DMG, and you combine that with silica, and that helps your porphyrins, which are what carries out the toxins through your urination process, and dimethylglycine with silica will pull the metal out. And I don't know, I don't think I told you that yet either, Twyla.
Christina England recommends silica water. And
yes.
She says that she has two autistic children, and she has cured her, stopped her seizures. Through the silica water. And
well, dimethylglycine pulled my daughter out of her bed. So that made a difference. Huge, huge. That was, and we did Fiji water. And ditched the table salt and went to pink Himalayan salt instead.
Now, I just recently ordered pink Himalayan salt. And what are the benefits that you know of pink Himalayan salt?
Oh, my God, there's 64 different.
For you, but no.
Yeah. I mean,
really?
look at that pink Himalayan salt benefits. Just Google it. Oh, my God.
Oh.
Amazing.
Wow. Well, so you've become savvy in an effort to help your own daughter, Lisa.
Absolutely.
Tell me what... Please tell me. I'm interested.
Now, what will kill
the
COVID-19 is the mushroom mix. There's a mushroom tincture. Mushrooms are really good for the lungs.
That's news.
Yeah. But anyway, let's bring Twyla back in. So what did you come up with, Twyla?
Oh, well, if you wanted to talk about the herbs, well, you guys mentioned Fiji water. Fiji water was one of the keys to me reversing my POTS, the silica in it, drawing the aluminum out of my brain and helping, you know, bring back into harmony to some extent my...
You mean Fiji bottled water that you can buy in the store?
Yep.
Fiji?
Yes.
Yep, it has the type of silica that binds with the aluminum and draws it out. And this isn't nonsense. I mean, look up Dr. Chris Exley, aluminum expert out of the UK, and he has science that shows the mechanism. But, yeah, that stuff is awesome.
Ah,
yep.
Okay,
yep.
Great.
That's, yep, I'm on PG lot.
But some of the other, my favorite herbs, that have helped me get to the point where I can even talk to you guys. Chinese cat's claw, that helps with the remyelination of neurons. An herb called Dan Shin, which is a type of sage, also known as red sage, that helps with cytokine remodulation and remyelination of neurons.
What was that
mane,
one?
A mushroom. Dan Shin, also known as Red Sage, helps with cytokine remodulation. That's a lot of problems you see in people with autism is cytokines just going crazy, causing this inflammation, just having overreactivity to everything. Dan Shin or Red Sage just helped me with that. And lion's mane, that type of mushroom, has helped grow new neurons and also helps with multiple chemical sensitivity you see in a lot of injured people. An herb called motherwort. Motherwort is mitochondrial support and is neuroprotective. It helps with anxiety and insomnia also. I'm a fan of that. And then tryptophan, it lowers brain inflammation. So that's just a sampling of ashwagandha, I like that too. Helps with adrenal function and remyelination of neurons. So herb-wise.
Tryptophan, get you some turkey.
And the cold laser therapy that my chiropractor's doing to help me regrow neurons, man, that's kicking butt too. So these things are helping a bunch. Yep.
Excellent. That's exciting stuff.
It is. Healing feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Sure does. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
I agree. Sally, did you get all that?
Yeah,
I was writing.
Let's see where we're at in this interview so I can tell people what mark to go to if they want a series of helpful hints. Let me look at where we're, how many minutes we're into it.
Well, of course, like anything, people can be sensitive to stuff or react to stuff, so people got to be careful, you know. I mean, some of the stuff that I tolerate might make somebody else sick. So.
Right, you were very careful to say that earlier, that everybody...
I think the last thing we wanted to talk about was what Posey brought up about people wanting the services over the healing modalities. You know, we've given the healing modalities, but people still are demanding government services and stuff. And, that's understandable because as you go into a elementary school and you look at all the different classrooms, you'll see, and this compared to when my kids were in school, there was, when you look at the special needs room, there was like next to none when my kids were in school. And today they're like everywhere. They have kids they're bringing in and out of wheelchairs and all kinds of injuries, which is really disheartening to me. In my mind, we need to just eliminate the cause, which is why I have that as my, and it won't change, their moratorium for vaccination. You can't top that one, Sally. That original silver one that you sent me in the mail is my favorite.
Well, great. I'm glad you like it.
That's the sign we're holding up at the health department.
Right.
So,
I remember.
I don't know. I understand the push for services, but I think what needs to be incorporated with that push is exactly what President Trump did with, inject some detergent or whatever. I like what I see President Trump doing and defunding these people. He's not defunding the entire organization, but he's defunding in areas that need to be defunded. So...
Well, I would love to see these agencies go south. Not only are they, dangerous to our health, but they are authoritarian, and all of our legislators bow to them above all others. So they really run the show.
Our governor of Missouri is not bowing to them. I can see that our governor of Missouri, I've watched his addressed to the people like four times last week, and the man knows how to read science for one. He knows how to make a logical decision, and he says, there ain't anybody else going to tell me how to run my state. And I love that about him. Missouri, we're opening up in May 4th.
The governors appoint the health commissioners. You realize that? So
yes, and you know what? Nobody has made anything mandatory here yet. There is nothing mandatory in Missouri yet.
Great. Glad to hear it. And you are part and parcel of that Phyla and
Absolutely.
Lisa.
And I'm going to stay, I'll go down and have a talk with the governor personally if I need to. But what I saw of him, and I looked into his eyes, and he said there are so many different variables to all of this that this is what we're going to do. We're going to open up on May 4th, and that's just the way it is. And everybody in our state has gotten their stimulus and all that stuff. So I don't know.
The stimulus came from the federal government. Is this correct?
Yes, the stimulus came from the federal government. So, Trump is doing something right. He's not, making everybody starve.
No, I think he's doing everything he can do.
Right.
I
think there's more to the picture than being told to the American people. There always is. Always is. That top secret envelope.
Oh, that was something, huh? What did that say? Somebody actually reported what it did say. And I forgot, if you can believe, I forgot.
You know what, Sally,
I
just pulled that out of the air. I wasn't talking about any envelope.
I was talking about the one that was distributed at Bush Sr.'s funeral. Somebody actually found out what was in it, and I cannot remember. I can't believe, of all things, to slip my head. But anyway, of all things, right? Everybody was wondering, what the heck did it say? But anyway, but Twyla, you just give such hope to people who have autism. If I had an autistic child and I were to listen to you speak, I would be so excited to think that an autistic, someone with that category could be so remarkably intelligent, because I often wondered. My sister, she was not had did not have that diagnosis. She had severe mental retardation, but nonetheless, I always wondered what's going on inside. She couldn't speak. She had echolalia, and then she stopped speaking altogether. But I always wondered what's going on inside her head, as so many parents of children who've had the diagnosis of autism wonder. And quite frankly, if it weren't for the Gardasil vaccine, this vaccine and all the trouble that it has caused, 100 different kinds of disabling attributes resulting from this, it gives a window into their autistic children. I have heard this time and again, that the Gardasil girls are giving a window into what's going on in their children that they could not have assumed or could not have detect. So,
I've got two of them from a Gardasil damaged girl. So, when there's a study ready to be done, I got two of them. when we're talking about going through the genetic and DNA and stuff, if, the mother can be damaged by a vaccine, it'll damage the offspring. And, my little Serenity is pretty damn smart for a 7-year-old. But she had a black spot in her eye for about the first 4 years, but I fed her organic, 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 and she has a taste for organic now, and the spot went away, which is interesting.
Well, there you go. Well, I have
a
question about
little Caden is hell on wheels. He has so many more challenges after facing being the gestational diabetes on top of the Gardasil damage. And I'm telling you, the boy, he has a very, very bright future in demolition.
That's funny. I want to ask Twyla. That's very funny. Twyla, if you could take a moment and reflect, before you answer, of course, on what improves gut flora. Because my daughter has really, really bad digestive issues thanks to the Gardasil vaccine. And I wanted to know if you have any idea. I know a lot of autistic children experience digestive issues as well. So if you've looked into this and could think about it and make some recommendations while Lisa and I chit-chat,
Can I say something about that? Because I have a little insight there.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. That's complicated because, I mean, there can be, again, it's a matter of everybody having a different ecosystem. And sure, every autistic person's gut is screwed up to some extent, but how they're screwed up with loss of certain microbes and excess of certain other microbes and stuff like that, it's going to vary from person to person. So what has helped for me is I killed off the candida. I had candida overgrowth, which a lot of people have, and I used Paudarco, PAUD-ARCO. I used a tincture of Paudarco to kill off that overgrowth, and then I helped regrow the good stuff with a supplement called Inulin, I-N-U-L-I-N. I also use a probiotic called Megaspore Biotic, which spore probiotics are better than most because most probiotics don't even survive the stomach acid, so end up being a waste of money. Those things were helpful to me, but I mean, the whole microbiome research is such a young science. And I mean, there's places you can have your gut but microbes mapped, but still, you know, what addition of what and subtraction of what is going to help some people is so unique to the individual. Like, I tried stuff that was supposed to be, you know, fermented vegetables and kombucha and stuff like that. Well, all that stuff's a high histamine, and I was trying it at a time I couldn't tolerate histamines very well, so it was just making me really sick. So was it helping my gut? I don't know. It was making me so sick otherwise that I couldn't really tell you because I was having a reaction to all the histamine. So that's just experiment, but that's what works. That's what has helped my gut, those things I named.
Well, you know what I bought myself was, fermented vegetables?
Yeah.
I bought powdered fermented vegetables.
Ooh.
Oh.
I don't know. I haven't tried it yet.
Huh.
Oh.
I worry about with the powders is they add a emulsifier to keep them from clumping together, and I hope
that
throws a red flag,
right?
To me. Huh?
Wouldn't that be aluminum? Isn't that what they put in things?
Well, there's different emulsifiers, but usually an emulsifier is not a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I got it through the Health Rangers Foods store.
I've done a lot of research on this black garlic that I'm talking about and making, growing
mm-hmm.
and making. They've done a lot of different research on extracts, like if they use a hexane to extract it or whatever, but as we all know, that nothing is just as good unless it comes from the earth. But this fermented black garlic, you know, garlic is a really good antibiotic. It's nature's antibiotic. It's an antiviral. It is an anti-inflammatory. It is. It will help restore the gut biome, and that's probably part of what's helping you too, Twyla.
Just a little bit. Garlic is good for all those things. Sorry, I'm kind of a barefoot herbalist. I learned that term barefoot recently. I kind of like to use it. But garlic is actually not very systemic in any of those things. It's very localized in all those things. And I'm not saying it's bad or anything. It's really good, but it's limited. It's very limited.
Black garlic is
like,
8 times what regular garlic
systemic.
Is.
Systemic. Yeah.
Did I send you the copy of the research and the benefits of it? It's all in a very, very well written empirical study.
Cool. Huh? You didn't send it, but I looked it up.
I may or may not have sent
my
it to you.
Understanding
I don't know. I'll send it again.
Of these treatments, garlic's cool, but it's a very localized treatment. And for something as severe as autism or as injury, you need something way more systemic in addition to the localized stuff.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, obviously. I mean, you've just listed off a whole plethora.
Well, I saw my local natural grocery store. They had sold out as soon as the COVID stuff, they started popping up. They sold out of garlic. And I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense because it's antiviral. But what's funny, I went to the supplement section and I asked, do you have licorice root? And they showed me, and they're like, yeah, and they had licorice root for days. I mean, they had stores and stores of licorice root. And I'm just laughing because
right.
licorice root is a far more potent systemic antiviral than garlic could ever hope to be. But nobody, you know, I mean, you really have to, like, look into this. But people get attached to
right.
one little thing and they hear about it, garlic. And they left all the
right.
licorice root on the shelves. And I'm like, well, that'll work better. So anyway,
right.
not to diss the garlic,
yeah.
I'm just saying. I just try to be accurate about things. Is what I'm saying.
Well, what are the benefits
right.
of elderberry syrup, for example? I just bought elderberry syrup.
Oh, shoot. That's an immune potentiator. I can't tell you what pathways with out of my – I'd have to look. That's where I get comfortable. I can say, like,
that's
if you what
have I love about
say, oh, is it the TH1 or the TH2 pathway and da-da-da out of my brain without reading? That's where I get confused. But it's an immune potentiator, but you'd have to look up which pathways because I can't keep that brain.
Well,
it's
I
huge.
Want – this stuff is so delicious, I do not even have words. It is absolutely, oh, my God. I could just down the whole bottle. It is great. I want elderberry pie. It's so delicious. I can just imagine what it would be like in a pie. Mm.
Ah, maybe I'll send you some elderberry
it's
here on my farm.
Ooh,
my,
wow, you want to make me an elderberry
my
pie?
My son's
boy?
Father-in-law is investing in it.
Yeah.
Yep, he's
what?
Gonna grow it. He's gonna grow it commercially.
Well, all I
cool.
can say is the first person who produces an elderberry pie, I am your customer for life.
All right. Deal.
Well, I've been trying to find elderberry pie. There's a gal close to me who'll make any pie that you ask, except for the two things I want. One is mincemeat pie. I haven't had mince pie. A good one in years,
okay.
And I love mince pie, and elderberry pie I've never had, but I'm down to try it. I love plum pie. I love apricot pie. Oh, I'm a pie gal.
We have a corner cafe over here that makes that kind of stuff, and they I think I've actually seen an elderberry in there.
Really?
Oh,
try it. Try it just to let me know how it is.
Yeah. I will next time I see it, but all the restaurants are closed.
Good. We used to have a place called 4 and 20 Pies. You could get any pie you wanted. I mean, literally,
huh.
They had 24 different kinds of pie.
Well, maybe some new businesses will spring up. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out, won't it? You're not in the best state for all this stuff, Sally, are you? Are they still got you on drone patrol in your backyard?
No, I'm not in North Carolina or Connecticut.
Well, I thought you were
where...
You're in New York, right?
Right. They don't have drone patrol here.
Okay. That's North Carolina and Connecticut?
Well, North Carolina is saying they're going to, and I understand Connecticut already has.
Wow.
Yeah, no, New York. Our mayor is calling for people to snitch on one another.
De Blasio, right?
Yeah. And he got such pushback. People really were flipping him the bird big time. I've never seen such backlash so immediately. Because he's like, we can all help one another. And we can as if he's, you know, offering... people, thank God people reacted that way, because one has to wonder, you know, as I say, it took him going door to door vaccinating or fining or jailing people for refusing the MMR to get 20 people together, to get 20 people together on the steps of City Hall. That's what it took.
Right.
Only 20 showed up. We should have had 20 million. So I mean, we only have 8 million, but we should have had at least 2,000. You know,
well, thanks for being that 20, Sally. You're the best activist ever. I'm telling you, hit the streets of running. She's a good one.
For all the good it's done us, we had one victory, Twyla, one victory, and we finally overturned the flu shot mandate for the little ones. Okay.
Oh,
hot shots. Hot shots.
Excellent.
So friendly. Tacha. Woohoo. Anyway, so we got it overturned, and it took them 2 years of appealing to get it reinstated. And only in New York City, not the rest of the state, just us.
They wanted to show you personally.
Well, it was
so
kind
I'm
of interesting.
I'm curious if that guy standing by the light pole could have been creating your personal tornado.
There's no guy standing near a light pole. I don't know what you're talking about in that regard.
You said there was a guy standing by a light pole waiting on the bus or something, and nothing in his hair was moving or anything.
Oh, no, that was a completely separate scenario. When I went to the Department of Health and Human Services to call for a national moratorium on vaccination, right? It was four and a half hours of what they're going to do to adults, and it's all playing out. What they said was that they're going to chip all children, and the emphasis on all came out three times in a row. Chip all children, chip all children. It was hilarious. But that's all they said about kids. Everything else was about adults. And the pearl that came out of that was we are going to force vaccinate adults using the Department of Homeland Security if necessary. So it's, as I say, I'm not surprised. I heard it back in 2016. But when I went out for a break, Twyla. I'm so sorry. When I went out for a break. First of all, everybody was saying before I left, nobody was, talking to me until it came to the break. And everyone said, we have cake. Would you like some cake? I had like five or six, maybe seven people say to me, would I like some cake? All I needed was a cigarette. As you can tell, I'm coughing. I'm a smoker. So after 4.5 hours of listening to garbage from all these people, I needed a cigarette bad. And I was about to address them. So I went out, and I had a smoke. I had to walk half a block to get off the property because you couldn't smoke anywhere on the property. So I went to a Vietnam War Memorial. No, to a war memorial. The only thing you couldn't do there is drink. So I was like, great, I can smoke. So I had a cigarette. Yeah, so I had a cigarette. But when I came back on the property, all this dirt flew up in my eyes, and I was not going to give them a statement from myself, except, I was going to culminate a professional's statement by calling for a national moratorium. I read the words of Vera Scheibner, who is the best research scientist I know, or anyone knows. The woman is she has her own library. She has her own library. But anyway.
I've followed Vera a lot of years, too.
Yeah, she's remarkable. But anyway, so I came back, all this dirt flew up in my eyes, and then I had my own personal typhoon. I literally took me half an hour to get to walk half a block, one determined step at a time with my skin flapping backwards. My skin was like, it was, and so I used to work in a wind tunnel. It was 1,000 times worse than this wind tunnel I worked in. And so I finally, after got there, I look to my left, and there's a guy who's relaxed. He's on his cell phone. His hair is in place. He's standing between two bushes, neither of which has a leaf moving. And I am
exactly
the most unbelievable thing. So I could have reached out and touched him if I, you know, just leaned over about a foot. I could have touched the guy's shoulder. And here I am struggling against struggle to get to the door, and I get inside, and, of course, everything goes off. You know, all the beepers go off, and they have to check my pants, and they have to check my purse, and whatever. All I did was have a smoke.
He was lighting you up. That guy was lighting you up.
Sweetheart, out of the 100 people who were there, no one touched that cake.
Really?
Right. Just thought I'd throw that out.
That's interesting. Wow.
The whole thing was wild beyond belief. But anyway, so
I'm glad you're smart enough to decline the cake.
I just needed a cigarette. I wasn't even thinking about that. But it did occur to me when I got back. There are 100 people who have had a half-hour break, and nobody has touched that cake. And the only communication they had with me was to point me towards the cake. Here's the cake, and there's the cake. Sorry, but
wow.
Yeah, right?
I couldn't follow all of that, but the general gist is weirdness.
Well, I also had a wild situation with a tornado on my back porch, literally just there, spinning like mad, throwing things up against the door, and I was on the phone. And the woman was, you know, talking incessantly. A stranger, I didn't know who she was. And I just said to her, I have to go. There's a tornado on my porch.
Oh.
Yeah, just right in front of the door, just spitting, you know.
Interesting.
I closed the door on it. But the next day.
I don't want to come in the house.
Close the door. Close the door. Funny.
The next day,
Sally used to be a comedian.
Well, I'm not trying to be funny, believe me. This is for real. But the next day, I didn't recognize any of the squirrels. We had all new squirrels in my neighborhood the next day. I was like, what happened to my usual squirrels, you know?
Weird.
Yeah, they were all gone. They got blown away, and we got new squirrels.
Squirrel replacement operation now. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. It was a squirrel replacement operation.
Wow. All right, girl. I think we better, like go ahead and wrap this thing up. I've liked my daughter's phone long enough.
I really thank you, Lisa, for introducing me to Twyla. This has been such a useful interview. My goodness.
Thank you. I knew it would be, and I'm sorry it took so long to do it. Like I said, I've just been gun-shy for a few years and trying to raise a hill on wheels. So.
Thanks for the opportunity, Sally. I appreciate it, and thanks for working with me on this, Lisa. Thank you.
It's been my pleasure, and I thank you for the interview. I appreciate it, and how many books have you sold now, Twyla? How many books have you sold now?
Oh, I don't know what the latest numbers. I don't know.
Okay, well, hopefully this will bump you up.
I'm definitely getting a book. I am most assuredly getting a book. Now, you've written more
than
one book.
You'll love
it, too. Is this correct?
Great read.
Sorry, I can.
She's going to write another book.
My question is, have you written one or more than one book currently? Do you have more than one book? I thought you said there was more than one book.
No, I have only written the one book, Regression. That's all I've written.
Okay.
And then she has, written essays. We'll also post the links to the bottom of this, and I've already done some of it. You've written a lot, Twyla. You have a website, too, so the website is posted in the link, too.
Yeah, thinkingpatient.com is my website, and then I have written a few blog essays for Mad in America.
Okay, so those are separate blogs, or you go to Mad in America?
Yeah,
Mad in America is someone else's website, and it's a website that talks about it's primarily critical of psychiatry, Mad in America, and I have some essays that are posted there, you'll find lots of good quality psychiatry critical essays from all sorts of people on that website. But my personal blog is athinkingpatient.com.
athinkingpatient.com.
Yep.
The A starts with A. Okay. athinkingpatient.com. All I can say is I know someone immediately when I get off with you. I'm going to recommend both of these websites to, and to look for your blogs within. So you're a writer, basically. You're an author and a blogger. And are you a journalist as well? Are you considering following that path as well?
No, I'm actually moving away from all that. I just want to be a farmer and a healer. That's my real path. I just had the right to get through what I had to get through and learn what I need to learn to be at my next stage.
Well, all I can say is,
amen,
Lisa, Joseph. and you should come back. And what I want you to do is think about the many different, I mean, every disease in internal medicine is caused by vaccines. So I would like you to give some thought to addressing the ones that you see the most prevalent, and let us have a think tank of possible ways
solution.
To recover ourselves from
solution.
You know, choose the ones that you are interested in, because there's so many adverse reactions you can't cover them all, but let's do this again, because I think people will benefit from this. And I know I have benefited greatly just by listening to the things that you're doing, that you're thinking of doing, that you consider. It's just, as you say, try. You'll never know unless you try. And if the things don't have adverse reactions like these pharmaceutical products, then what's the harm in trying, you know?
Right. Well,
yep.
The Bible says that God put how many herbs on this earth to sustain us? Not that I'm, like, wanted to bring the Bible into it, girls. I'm sorry, but there is a book that writes about this, you know?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Lisa. Since COVID-19, I took off my usual necklace and I replaced it with my cross. I thought, I'm going to wear a cross from now on. I think I'll feel better just wearing it.
I tell you what, I'm not a disbeliever, and I think that the concept is right on. So, anyway, as Ness said, I don't want to go into a religious discussion or any of that stuff. Love to both of you and all
bad.
Your family.
I'm sorry, you couldn't. Religion is bad.
Right. I think we're all on more of a spiritual path than any kind of religion could ever describe. But, you know, there's a good name for source, and why not put a cross on it? Who knows? So
right. That's where I'm at.
Right.
All right, dear.
Call it whatever you want.
Exactly. Connect to source and have faith in whatever it is that you feel responds to you. You know, honestly.
Right.
But I do pray. I've never prayed as much as I have since my daughter was injured by Gardasil. I prayed for 3 days while she slept, and she got up. And I really believe that that was part and parcel of why she did get up.
Right.
That was, you know.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. There's no question that that's why the answer was sent to me via the televangelist. You know, the dimethylglycine message, because that did pull my daughter up out of bed. So I can't say I'm a disbeliever. Can't say that at all. But anyway, I do need to return this phone to my daughter, and it was really lovely having this conversation. I'm so glad we finally got to do it. And I know, Sally, that was no fault of yours, because you're very accommodating and ready and willing and eager. And I love that about you, too. So.
Well, thank you, dear. Great guest, and great talking with you, Lisa, as always. Okay, cheerio, both of you, and thanks. We'll do this again when you're ready, okay?
Thank you,
honey.
Bye,
okay,
Twyla.
Bye, dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, everybody get a copy of Regression. The link is directly under the screen, and shortly I will upload the picture to the you'll see a picture of the book as well. Okay. Again, thank you, Twyla. Twyla Hiari? Is that correct? Nobody's there. Okay. Thank you, Twyla Hiari and Lisa Kathleen Lasper. Cheerio.